Welcome to The Road to Adoption and Beyond, A Mother's Story. My name is Sara Dimmerman, also known as Help Me Sara, and today I'm in conversation with actress and writer Nia Vardalos. Nia is the Academy Award and Golden Globe nominated actress and writer of My Big Fat Greek Wedding and the author of Instant Mom. Nia was born and raised in Winnipeg, Canada, but now resides in Los Angeles with her actor husband, Ian Gomez, almost 8-year-old daughter, Ilaria, and several pets. She is currently working on balancing her acting and writing career with motherhood and adoption advocacy. It's my privilege and honor to be included in this balancing act. And I have to tell you, Nia, that after learning about and receiving your book during your Canadian book tour for Instant Mom, I watched you on Toronto City TV's Breakfast Television one morning with Dina Pugliese. And like Dina, I was so touched by your very moving story of the first time that you met your daughter, how she called you mommy and how you felt, that tears began to roll down my face onto the toast and peanut butter that I had prepared for my 13-year-old's breakfast that morning. And it was exactly at that time that she came downstairs and seeing me sitting at the table with tears running down my face, she assumed that it was because of how I was feeling about the argument we'd had the night before. She came over to me, wrapped her arms around me and said, "I don't like it when you're sad, Mommy. I'm sorry about last night." I didn't have the heart to tell her that my tears were more those of joy for you, but I wanted to thank you for bringing yet another mother and daughter together.
Oh, that's an amazing story. Oh, thank you so much. So, I got home last night from a 9-city book tour. The longest I've ever been away from my daughter. She's now 8. She was 3 when we met. The longest I've ever been away is overnight. And she made the choice to stay in Los Angeles with my husband while I went and talked about this book. The tour started Easter morning. She threw her arms around my neck and whispered in my ear at 6 o'clock in the morning, "Go get some kids adopted." And then last night, I felt that I was cried out, spent, just exhausted. I got home, showed her all the presents, we laid in bed together, and the first thing she said is, "So do you think some kids got adopted?"
Oh, that's...
I tears were rolling into my ears.
I was like,
they're so innocent. They say things that just humble us.
I know. I write what my kids say. I write it down. My oldest daughter is now 21 and my youngest is 13, but I still write things down that they say because I always think I'm going to remember, but I never do. And it's so wonderful to look back at these journals with them and for them to read about things that they'd said, you know, and they can't believe it. And we both laugh and cry together.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's just like the best gift that you could give to a child is let them know that their life matters.
Absolutely.
Because they have so little say every day. They go to school, there are rules and guidelines, and they have to learn. And sometimes I'm so cognizant of how little playtime there is in my daughter's day.
For sure.
So for any child that I can make her feel empowered, I try to do it, even if it's something that I don't want to do, like go and play in the mud.
Yeah.
That's the choice she makes. I make myself do it.
Well, she's very blessed to have you and Ian.
Thank you. We think that she's healed our hearts and we're the lucky ones. We're so, so lucky.
Well, you're all a lucky family. You're a lucky family together. Let's put it that way. I wonder if you could perhaps share with my audience that poignant account of the first time you met the little girl with blonde streaks in her hair, the little girl you had envisioned meeting even before you and Ian were introduced to her. The same story.
I interrupted you.
That's okay. The story that you shared in your book and shared with Dina on Breakfast Television. Do you know the one I'm talking about? When you meet her and then okay, go ahead.
I had been trying to become a mom for almost, at that point, I'm sure it was close to a decade. And I had started to visualize a child and then I wasn't even fully aware that I was dreaming of meeting somebody. And I think it's because I had met with the workers from American Foster Care and they had told me, "You will be a mother within a year." why they said that is because they had just advised me there were 129,000 kids in the U.S. alone that were legally emancipated for adoption. In Canada, we have 30,000 kids living in foster care who are also, their parental rights have been terminated. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know that this was available in North America to me as a citizen of both countries. Mm-hmm. So I was stunned, and I think it really went into my psyche because I started to see a little girl with blonde streaks in her hair. It was very, very strange. And believe me, I make fun of myself in the book, Infant Mom, because my husband and I, even though we're actors, we make fun of people like that. We call them the whackers. And so here I was, I thought, oh my gosh, am I really going to put this in the book? And I did, because in a way, I truly enjoy making fun of myself. But anyway.
But all those things make you even so much more real. Those were the parts I loved best.
Oh, thank you. Well, the morning that we had gotten the call about our daughter and we were driving to meet her, we found out she'd been living in a loving foster home and she was available for adoption. So we drove to meet her, and the child is not told anything, which is very compassionate. The child is just probably just thinks that they're meeting more social workers or they're going to play with somebody. And so she was being taken to an office so that we could meet. As we drove up to meet, we were all in the parking lot at the same time. And there were many people in the parking lot, but I saw a group of people holding a little girl about 3 years old in a social worker. I now found out she was a social worker's arms. And as I walked toward this group, I was drawn toward them. Well, the little girl turned around and looked right at me. Hmm. And all I thought was, oh, I found you.
Yeah.
And I pulled my arms out to her, and she came right into my arms. And I said many things. I don't know why. I just knew she is my daughter. This is the girl I have been waiting for. Yeah. I whispered things in her ear like, I will always take care of you. I'm so happy to finally meet you. Hello. Just, you know, touching her, kissing her, stroking her. And she let me. So we spent the day together, and following the protocol of foster care, they told us everything, full disclosure. They said she can be a little guarded, withdrawn. She did not speak. She was almost 3 years old.
Right.
And we spent the day with her. We went for lunch. And at the end of the day, they had to take her back to the loving foster home. They had to, as we waited to be matched, officially matched. So I kept saying, let us take her now. I know this is right. Let me take her. We've been cleared as a foster home ourselves. And they said, no, we have to follow the rules. You will see why. A judge will make sure that we follow protocol. You don't want to bend any rules. And I said, no, you're right. I don't. And I tried to be calm and soothing with this little girl because I knew she could hear everything. And although she didn't speak all day, I knew she understood.
Right.
So I put her in the car, and I leaned in as they buckled her into the car seat. And I said, see you soon, sweetie. And she looked right at me and said, bye, Mommy.
Yeah. Wow. That's the point that I cried when you were telling that story to Dina. That was amazing. So amazing.
It killed me to this day. She just knew. So we tell her now. We tell her, you picked us.
Yeah.
There was no choice. The foster care workers heard it. Everybody just was stunned. And as they drove away, we all looked at each other like, did that just happen? We tell her all the time that her two young birth parents couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, and they couldn't do it, and they didn't abandon her.
Right.
They did the best thing for her by placing her in foster care.
Right.
And we explain that to her so that she knows she's loved by four people.
Right.
Two of whom she can't remember.
Right.
And the two of us are her two crazy parents. This is the match of the century because our daughter's really funny.
Yeah.
So it's all great. It worked really well for her and us.
So you mention in your book that parenthood is not for everyone, but that for you and Ian, there was no question that you wanted to be parents. And as a result, you work desperately to try to make this happen, and you share your story in the book. And even though I understand that you say you use the word hate in your book, you hate talking about your 10-year struggle with infertility. Would you mind sharing a little about what you went through before finally coming to terms with the idea that you may not be able to conceive biologically?
I could conceive biologically. I couldn't take a pregnancy to term.
Oh, okay.
I had a that was a moment in time for me that having gone through, I talk about it in the book, I went through over 10 fertility treatments, and I don't regret it because I know who I am. I'm stubborn and I'm obstinate, and it led me to my real daughter
right.
and taught me many things, from patience and tolerance to just an acceptance sometimes that it's okay to say, I can't do this.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So I had never had to say that before because I pushed through on everything. I had impossibly moved to the States, impossibly gotten my Big Fat Greek wedding made, impossibly been nominated for an Academy Award and a Golden Globe and all the craziness that happened. Why on earth was this eluding me?
Right.
Well, now on the other side of this, I have wisdom and not much, believe me, I'm still an idiot. But I think it all happened so that I could learn the many, many ways of becoming a parent, whether blended family, via marriage, or biologically, or via adoption. And I know it sounds crazy, but I'm grateful that it all happened to me because my daughter is the girl that I am supposed to have met.
Yeah.
She's my real daughter, and I get that now. And I know it sounds hokey, but I say in the book, you sort of lose your cynicism when something like this happens to you. It's a miracle.
Yeah. No, I totally relate to that because I had two miscarriages between my two daughters, and so I have an 8-year gap between them. And I often say to my younger daughter, you know, as much as devastating as it was to have lost those two babies, I'm glad in some way because I wouldn't have had you, and I can't imagine life without you. So I can relate to what you're saying. That sometimes... Go ahead.
No, please go on.
I was just going to say that so I can relate to what you're saying about sometimes as difficult as life can be, and life sends you curveballs and you're not sure why it's happening and why you can't, as you said, you know, you've been so persistent in so many other areas of your life and you've felt that you've worked through things and yet this is eluding you, you know, now, and then as you said, then you understood why.
Yeah, I did. I do. And now I know it sounds hokey, but I keep saying, I think the reason my Big Fat Greek wedding happened to me is so that I could use my big mouth to talk about adoption.
Right.
And I'm not offering it as an option. I'm offering the book as it is, as you see, it's not, your children are biological. It's not really about adoption. It's not really about infertility. It's not really only about motherhood. The book is how, as I was writing it, I realized when I am a fearless idiot and jump into things and ask questions later, it works for me.
Yeah.
And the whole book is almost a lesson to myself to stop second-guessing and stop doubting and go with the instinct that serves me well, which is the same way I got my Big Fat Greek wedding made. Impossibly, I jumped on stage, did all the characters, hoping that an agent would come. They didn't come, but Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks came,
right.
And they made my movie and let me play the lead. So how did that happen? When Tom Hanks called and said, we saw your play, we've read your screenplay, we'd like to make it into a movie, like a fearless idiot, I asked him if I could play the bride.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's idiotic at all. It's about just seizing. It's about knowing when a window of opportunity is there and climbing through it.
Yeah.
So when you finally decided to move on and you considered adoption or adopting, and you write in your book that Googling adoption took me to strange places. Can you tell me more about that? I mean, everybody goes to the internet nowadays. Is the internet the place to start?
I believe so, but at the same time, you have to have eyes wide open because there is a lot of less than credible information on the internet, and that's what happened to me. I would go, I'd search, I'd find myself on sites and think, well, this sounds right. Well, wait a minute, they want $60,000 as a retainer, and it's actually an ad for an agency. Then I'd call that agency and be told there was no guarantee of a match ever, and no, you would not get the retainer back.
Right.
I just found it to be so unregulated. So this is the book that I wished was out there. I wrote 25 pages of how to adopt in the back of the book.
Right.
I explained what is the difference between foster agency, what is the difference between foster family agency, what fostering, what's adopting? All the words that I couldn't decipher because it's a lot of information.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful resource. I mean, aside from being a great, interesting read, it's an incredible resource for anyone that is going through this process, for sure. And even after you began researching the adoption process, you write about how you decided at some point to take a break or to check out for a while, to give yourself time to grieve and to finally let yourself cry. And you write about needing to go through the grief, which I believe in too. Can you tell us a little bit about how healing this process was for you and why you feel it's so important to grieve the loss of what might have been?
I believe that we're a generation of go-getters, women, that we just get things done. And I definitely have been raised with the benefits of women before us who fought so hard for us to have equal rights and equal pay. So because of that, I kept thinking, I can do it all. I can have it all. And in the end, the best thing I did was check out of it all and just take the time to grieve what I had gone through and mentally heal, process, if anything, everything from the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. Just take it in, think it through. And ultimately, I found a happiness before I met my daughter. I was okay. We met our dog, and we adopted our sweet dog, Manny, who greeted me last night. I was soaking wet. He licked my entire face and neck last night. This is the gentlest of souls when you meet a dog Manny had been abandoned at a pound, and we had had our hopes, I write in the book, for parenthood. We had had our hopes for parenthood dashed under a bus, and we healed each other, and I felt good. By the time I met with the social workers from foster care, it was because I could accept that I wanted to be a parent, not out of desperation and anything, out of a simple need in myself to find my daughter.
Right, right. So you write in the book about some of the bumpy roads on the road to adoption. Obviously, you talk a lot about fertility. And can you call it fertility, actually? I mean, I guess it would be fertility, right?
I'm sorry, I just lost you for a second. Okay. Can you say that again?
Sure, you've talked about fertility, and then I was questioning, I guess it would be considered fertility, even though you were able to conceive, correct?
Yes.
Okay. For example, you write about questions that people asked about why you and Ian didn't have children, or all the well-meaning words of advice that you didn't really appreciate. Or the big question, when are you due, from people when you were bloated from the fertility drugs? And I just love the part in your book when you write that you should never ask a woman if she's pregnant unless her water breaks over your flip-flops or there's a baby arm dangling from her vagina and she asks you to cut the cord. That was so funny. I laughed out loud when I read that.
Thank you.
Because as a woman who has always struggled with my weight, I've often been asked, when am I due? And I want to strangulate the person and think, as a woman, do you not know that you don't ever ask a woman that she's pregnant unless, as you said, there's an arm dangling from her vagina? I thought it was just brilliant.
Thank you. It just happened to me. Just happened to me on this press tour on a plane. I was sitting beside a man who was commenting about how slim I am now in a way that it's almost like he forgot that I'm the same person.
Because
he said, I mean, well, I saw your first movie and you were pretty chubby. I didn't think you were hot, but you're hot now. I was looking at him like, I'm the same person. Be quiet. So he said, what are you doing now? So I said, I have a book out. It's called Instant Mom. And he goes, oh, I thought so. Points to my tummy and says, when are you due?
Oh my goodness, insult to injury.
I couldn't believe it. I told my husband, I just turned to him and I said, I'm not pregnant, we're done. I put my earphones in and just ignored him for the rest of the trip.
Oh my goodness.
And my husband said, you know, at least they're still asking if you're pregnant. And I said, okay, fair enough. Because then now I realize the next round that's coming all our way, ladies, if someone's going to say to us, are you pregnant? Oh no, wait, you're too old.
Exactly. I know. I mean, it's, you know, you could almost, You can't forgive a man, but you can definitely not forgive a woman who would know better. But I can absolutely understand how you would have just put your headphones in and ignored him. And I hope he got the loud and clear message.
Oh, I don't think so. I'm sure he went home and told all his friends that, you know, he was flirting with me or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly.
People like, I myself, and I'm very clear about it in the book, I myself have said and will continue to say stupid things to people. We all do.
Right.
And I'm hoping that in a way this book sort of gives us all a way to shrug it off and laugh through it. But at the same time, if it hurts, let it hurt.
Right.
It hurts. It's our right to conceive biologically. It's our right to also find our children via adoption. And it's our right to not have children either.
Right.
I don't like the term childless couple. It's so negative.
Right. It almost makes it sound like that couple is incomplete.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, the whole experience has opened my eyes, but you know, I don't blame people when they say stupid things. If, you know, they're said from not a nasty place.
Right.
I too say them. I asked a woman once when she was pregnant, given it, I was 17.
Yeah.
This man yesterday was in his 50s. He should know better.
Absolutely. So, a large part of your book is after Ilaria comes to live with you, and it was wonderful to just even hear the process that you came by to even come up with her name, because when she first came to you, I think that you were, it was suggested that you rename her, and just checking it out with her and coming up with different names and waiting for her response to see which name she connected with was so beautiful to read about. But also what was so real was seeing how, despite the fact that this was such a magical, wonderful experience for you and so much fun, you were also so honest about how challenging parenting can be, and especially challenging with a brave little girl who's very scared at first. So I thought it was just great that you talked a lot about the challenges that you went through as well, that are not just, you know, not just related to parents who have adopted, but for all parents who have had challenges.
Thank you. I wanted to, number one, I don't sugarcoat adoption in this book. There are children who have been abused and neglected and are going to come with a set of issues and challenges. I talk about those children in the same way that I applaud the heroes that I've met, mm-hmm. who adopt those children out of foster care and say, hey, you deserve better, and I'm going to be your hero. Mm-hmm. I love those people, and that's why I wanted to write this book about the social workers, the foster care workers, the parents that I've met who do these incredible things. And at the same time, I didn't want to gloss over how we transitioned our daughter. It was really challenging, and I'm only laughing now because it's in the past. But I was not laughing then. It was really hard. But what bonded me to women who have had their children biologically and via adoption or shared marriages or relationships is it's all the same.
Yeah.
That's what I realized. We're all instant moms.
Right.
No one's prepared for how daunting the responsibility is. And even me, who wanted it so badly, you would think it was just a bed of roses. But no. No, I'm honest. It was pretty challenging. Now that our daughter is almost 8, I've met a lot of parents who adopted their children and found out that it might not have been the wisest thing to rename our daughter. So I've told our daughter that when we unseal her records and find out what her name was before, if she wants to go back to that name, that's okay with us, or add it to her name. Of course, that's okay with us. Again, empowering her.
Yeah,
I hear
a lot about you wanting to empower her.
In the book, I try. I really do. Yeah, I try. She is a very brave kid, but I don't want to take that for granted. I have my catcher's mitt out for the issues and the challenges that come with adopting a child in the same way that all parents, I think, are really aware that their biological children, you know, things happen, things come up, kids go through stuff.
Right. Tell me about Daughter Day.
Oh, Daughter Day is a thing that we decided because we got to celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day, and we celebrated, and it was so great. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Let's make something great. So we made up a day, which is the day we all met, not the day her adoption was finalized, but the day we all met, and we call it Daughter Day. And that is the moment that she became our daughter, even though she's always been a daughter. We say this is the day that we all met and became a family. So we get to do anything that our daughter wants, which usually involves sugar for breakfast, Disneyland for lunch, and staying up late and watching movies. But it's just a whole day of celebrating the unique way that we became a family the instant we met.
That's wonderful. And you write in the book, you have so many wonderful lines, but there's a few that really stuck with me. One of them is, being a mother, actually being my daughter's mother, has changed me. My daughter filled a raggedy hole in my heart. She is the love of my life. So I'm wondering, can you share? I'm sure there's so many things to share, but one or two things. When you say that she's changed you, how has she changed you?
Sorry, I just got teary. I've been traveling so much, and I'm just a little sleep deprived.
I feel honored that you've got teary, so thank you for that.
I think it is, when I came home last night, I'm so used to being greeted with love. I have a loving husband. I have Manny, our dog, in our lives now for 8 years. And now we have a second dog, Louie, who is as wide as he is long. And that love is fantastic. As I got out of the car and Ian was pulling my suitcases out of the car. But when I looked at my daughter, I feel such a purpose on this earth. If she just can bring me to my knees with her sweetness and the things that she says. First of all, the first thing she said is, "Wow, you look tired."
Oh, what empathy. What empathy. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it wasn't even said meanly or anything. It was like, "You need some love." So she decided last night that we were going to take a bath together and that we were going to have dinner in bed, and just she was going to pamper me.
Oh, she wanted to take care of you in the way that you've taken care of her.
Yeah, she never let go of my hand. From the minute I got home, she touched me, she sat with me, she patted me, she stroked me, and I just looked at her like, why has this gift been given to me?
Why not?
Yeah, I know she's lovely. She's a lovely creature.
Well, you use so many wonderful descriptive words in your book. Like, you know, you use the word warm a lot, and you talk about even when she came up after they brought her to you, after the 24 hours or so, and you took her hand and it was warm. And you use the word soft a lot, you know, warm and soft, and the long eyelashes. I mean, I just, my heart melts while I'm reading it, so I can't imagine living with her.
She's one of those kids that I think she understands that there's a purpose for us all. And I think she has realized her purpose at quite a young age. She's still a typical kid. Still, you know, she'll say something completely wise and then the next minute ask for a dog.
Like she doesn't have two already.
She wants Dalmatian.
So I'm thinking that it takes a lot of courage and desire to help others to go from being the self-proclaimed private person that you are to deciding to share the details of your life with the world. And I agree with what you wrote about there being a difference between secrecy and discretion. And you certainly remain discreet when writing Instant Mom, while still sharing all the relevant details to others who are living through this experience. And one of the messages I took from the book is that if anyone has doubts that they could not love someone as much if he or she didn't spring from their loins, not to worry. That the love you feel is so intense that you want to carry, in your words, you want to carry Ilaria around in your mouth. I love that. You also write that yours is a how to adopt book, as you mentioned earlier. And that quote, as you said before, maybe I'm supposed to be using my big mouth to talk about adoption. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but in a nutshell, other than your book, how are you advocating for adoption?
I am trying with this book to, although it says it in the cover that I'm an advocate for adoption, I'm actually an advocate for the discussion among women and men of a personal happiness, no matter how it comes to us, whether it be with children, whether it be with career, whether it be by surrounding yourself with friends and family. I think that we all deserve to just ask ourselves, are we living, as Oprah says, are we living our best life?
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to do with this book, is just say, hey, it's not perfect. You would think that with the success of my Big Fat Greek Wedding, from you know, outward experiences, you would think that my life was perfect. I had so many people say, are you so happy? And yes, yes, I was. But inside, I was on a quest to be a mom.
Yeah.
So now I can say, are you so happy? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that we're running out of time, but just to wrap up, I must say that even though I've not walked in your shoes, I could so relate to so many parts of your book, including, as I said earlier, the loss of two miscarriages and my mom's passing, the grief, the loss. I could relate to how tears cried around your child are often ones of joy, and to the comfort that animals can provide through good and bad times. And I also love that you and my husband are both Winnipeggers. But what really stood out for me was your persistence and your passion in everything you take on. I loved reading about your career, your success, and the remarkable opportunities that life has given you, including meeting a wonderful man who shares the exact letters of your name, being part of a loving, supportive extended family, and being in the company of Oprah and the Queen of England. However, feeling that I know you a little from the words that I have read and now heard, I'm pretty sure that you would say that the most remarkable and treasured gift that life and God has granted you is your daughter, Ilaria Isadoria, which directly translated, you say, is a funny or joyous gift from God. And the dedication at the beginning of your book says it all. For my daughter, I thought I knew love, and then I met you. So I just want to say, Nia, I'm grateful and honored to have met you. You are as humble, warm, and witty as you are intelligent and accomplished. But above all else, you radiate as a mom. So thank you from one mom to another for sharing your story with me and my audience and for opening yourself up so that other people can learn from the road you have traveled on.
Wow, that's lovely. Thank you so much.
Well, it's really words that I wrote from my heart because I really was so touched by your book. And just as you said, people can look at you and think of your life has been one series of success after another, but the completeness that you feel by being a mom is just incredibly touching.
Thank you so much. What a lovely thing to say. Oh, I think I gotta eat something. I'm so
Go back to those snacks you write about in your book. I could as a writer, I could so relate to that as well.
Okay, I know. I eat my way through everything. All right. Well,
so thank you so much, Nia.
I'm sorry we have to go. I just loved talking with you. It was like sitting around with a friend. Thank you.
To see a full listing of all Help Me, Sara podcasts, or to learn more about Nia Vardalos, please visit the podcast section at www.helpmesara.com. You can also subscribe to Help Me, Sara podcasts on iTunes, subscribe to my Facebook page, which is Sara Dimmerman, Help Me, Sara, or follow me on Twitter at Help Me, Sara. Until next time.